Hello?
Hello. Okay, great. We are ready to go. So this is Alexandra Van Horn from Live Well Long, and we are continuing our Savvy Seniors series. And today I'm interviewing accomplished artist, watercolor artist, author, and speaker, John Bowen. So John, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Excited to have you. So you've overcome some things, John, and part of our the purpose of my podcast always is to inspire other seniors or will be seniors to look forward to creating a good life for themselves. And you've overcome some challenging things, and yet you're an accomplished artist and author and speaker. You served in the Vietnam War. So, and you've got tell us how many kids and grandkids and great grandkids you have.
Well, I have five children. I have nine great-grandchildren and six great-grandchildren.
Okay, so nine grandchildren and six great-grandchildren, right?
Right.
Is that what you
right.
said? Awesome. Beautiful. Christmas yeah. must be wild and crazy.
yeah. yeah. Well, they're kind of spread out, so it's not so bad. I'm glad to have them.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. Wonderful. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about number one, you're being an artist, and also as well how you served in the Vietnam War, some of the things you did.
Well, I joined the Air Force in 1961. I was stationed in Texas for 4 years. I got married there. I had two children by the time I got into my second enlistment. In my sixth year in the service, I got my orders to go to Vietnam and started my tour over there, starting my seventh year in the service. So I was an old guy when I went over. I was 26, mm-hmm. married with two kids. I was a staff sergeant. And I had been an illustrator all my time in the service. So when I went over, I was an artist. Mm-hmm. I worked in the 834th Air Division. And part of my job was to graphically document all the airlift operations in country.
Mm-hmm. And when you say in country, that's an Air Force
in
term?
In Vietnam. Yes.
That means in the country you were stationed at.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
yeah,
okay.
Yes.
No, that's fine. Okay, go ahead.
I had a year left to serve when I got back, I served that and got out and moved to Florida with my family. By that time, I had three children, mm-hmm. and I went to work for the Miami Herald in their advertising art department. Mm-hmm. I worked for them for the next 17 years. Then I worked for myself for 5 years as a graphic designer, and then mm-hmm. I finished up working for the Sun Sentinel mm-hmm. For another 16 years, and then I retired.
Wow.
So now I paint full-time.
Beautiful, beautiful. And art has always been your thing, which is just beautiful.
Right. Yeah. yeah. My dad was an artist, uh-huh. although not a professional artist. Mm-hmm. He liked to paint. He worked in oils, and he worked in pastels and pen and ink and pencil. Mm-hmm. So when I was very little, I tried to emulate him by doing my drawings and seeing what he did. And by the time I got into high school, I realized that I wanted to get into the art field as a profession. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to do that. I got a job in an advertising agency right out of high school and worked for them for 2 years before going into the service.
Right. Right.
And then I was 8 years in the Air Force as an illustrator and then into the newspaper business after I got out of the service. So right. one led to another. And I stayed in the art field all those years, almost 50 years.
Beautiful. Wow. And one of the things that I was surprised at when we first started talking years ago was that I didn't even realize that they had people that actually were, served in Vietnam to literally illustrate what was going on. I just assumed that what we saw on the news when I was growing up was all the kinds of pictures there were, which were photographers, but I had no clue that people are actually out there in the field drawing what was happening or painting.
So, yeah, most of the people that you see, if you ever see anybody doing any drawing, are usually people who are like professional illustrators who work for different magazines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There are some combat artists that are actually, servicemen. My job, when I went over there, I was a support troop. And I was supposed to work in a headquarters unit, which I did most of the time. But when they realized that I was actually an artist and a painter, they told me one day, they said, have we got a job for you? And next thing I know, I was getting on planes, going to different parts of the country and sketching the offloading of supplies and anything to do with resupply. Wow. When I finished the job, most of my work went to the Air Force Academy, or at least that's what they told me.
Right. Wow. So you didn't get to keep it. Yes.
No.
So so you served. You then, when you came back, you one day you were in Vietnam and then your tour of duty was over. And then suddenly you were back in the United States in civilian life. Can you talk about that for our listeners? Tell us, what that was like, that transition?
Well, one of the things that I didn't appreciate about the government and the military was the fact that they really didn't know a lot about PTSD back then.
Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, that's post-traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, yeah. A lot of troops coming back from the war will be suffering to some degree from post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. In fact, anybody who has any kind of a traumatic experience in their life can go through that. Mm-hmm. But what really aggravated me was the fact that they never told us about it. They never said, you might experience this or you might experience that. They just, one day I was there. In fact, the last day I was in country, we got rocketed on our base. And the next day I was home back in the States. So, that really blows your mind when you think about it.
Yeah, one extreme to the absolute opposite extreme. Wow.
Right. And they didn't tell us anything about it. They didn't give us any briefings. They didn't tell us that, you might experience this or that. You might get angry. You might be upset about stuff, different things. Mm-hmm. And that we didn't know, and we go home and we're with our families and, we've been thinking about doing this for the whole year.
Right. Thinking about
back and, going home and being back with our families again. Right. And it wasn't like we thought it was going to be like, because here we were getting angry about everything and getting very edgy about stuff. And I found myself walking around a lot outside my house trying to calm down. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was something with me. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, I was going crazy for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't want to talk. Well, when I first came back, I wanted to talk about it, but I ran into a lot of indifference or even hostility. So I just shut up about it.
Wow.
And I kept it inside for 25 years. Right. I never talked about it.
Now, you mentioned the hostility. Our listeners probably would be surprised to hear some of that. What was the hostility from and what was it about? Can you tell us?
Well, people would get angry at me if they found out that I was a Vietnam vet.
As though you were responsible for the war, in other words.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I think what it was, thinking about it years later, I think people were upset with the war, and they couldn't go to Washington and holler at the people in power, so they took it out on anybody they could. So here we were, Vietnam vets, and they just took their frustrations out on us, which I can understand to a degree, but not really. I mean, we didn't get a good homecoming, and we had to deal with all of this stuff quietly by ourselves for many, many years.
Right, because when you were in Vietnam, you were in a community setting with all the other servicemen. Then suddenly you come home, you're in civilian life, surrounded by civilians, and your right. Air Force buddies, some were still in Vietnam, some might be back in the States, but nowhere near you.
Right.
Yeah, so you were...
Especially when I got out of the service, I wasn't around anybody who was in the service or had been in the service recently.
Right.
So... rather than, I just wanted to get on with my life. I had a rough couple of years in the beginning, but I got past it. And, I thought I had gotten over it, but what had happened was because I didn't talk about it, I just pushed it back into my subconscious and it stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And so many years later, it started coming out. Mm-hmm. In fact, the reason it came out was because I started to write a story about it.
Right.
My daughter came to me one day after I was home about 25 years. She had been 2 years old when I went over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was there for my, the time I was in country. Right. And she came to me one day and said, "You were in the Army, right, Dad?" And I said, "No, I was in the Air Force." And so I thought about it later, and I said, "Well, my kids don't really know about that part of my life."
Right.
So I thought I would write a short story and tell them about it,
mm-hmm.
and then give each one of them a copy of it, and that would be that. But when I started writing it, everything started to come out, and I found that I really wanted to write a book about it.
Right.
And I, it took me about 20 years to write it. I started it in February of 93 and I finished it in February of 2013.
Right.
And I was smart enough to have a professional editor who would read, what's the word I'm looking for? A draft.
Right.
I'd finish a draft, and then she would critique it. And then I would write a second draft, and she critiqued that one. And when I finished the third draft, she said, "Okay, you're ready." And
very
so
cool.
After that, I went and I found a publishing company where I could self-publish it.
Right. And just to really give our listeners a clearer understanding, tell us about the sophisticated hardware and software you were using while you were writing this.
I printed everything.
You wrote it by hand on legal paper, right?
Yeah, I wrote it by hand.
Yes.
I just felt more comfortable doing it that way.
Right.
I have bags and bags of drafts and rewrites and stuff. And I've actually thrown some of them away, but I still have some of them.
Wow.
And but I felt it took me a long time, and there was periods of time when I didn't write at all.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time I didn't write for 6 months, but then I got back into it again.
Right.
And I used to have my friends, read parts of it and get their input.
Right.
But between them and the professional editor, they're the only ones that I actually, saw my book before it was finished.
Yeah, and that's amazing. So to go from writing a little short story for your kids, it became a 20-year process, and it actually won an award. So tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, well, it's an illustrated book. I put 43 drawings in it, and these are all new drawings because I created them for the book.
Okay,
I came home with nothing. I didn't want to come home with anything anyway, but all my stuff was left over there, went to the Air Force Academy.
Mm-hmm.
But and then I also did a color rendering for the cover.
Right. And the color rendering for the cover actually has a picture of you in the field, right?
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was from a slide that somebody took of me when I was sketching in the field. And when I started writing the book, I came across the slide and I thought, wow, that would make a great painting and a cover for my book.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
And it did.
And I started once it was self-published. I did some book talks. I started doing things with the veterans organizations, you know, and then exactly a year after the book came out, it was submitted by my publisher to the South Florida Authors and Publishers Association.
Mm-hmm.
They awarded me a silver medal for my book, which I was very pleased and, right. and really didn't, I didn't do it. I mean, my publisher did it and I didn't expect anything like that. And I thought it was, you know,
significant,
very rewarding.
Sure. Sure.
For me, you know, to somebody who thought my book was good enough to get an award, especially for somebody who really never considered himself an author.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But it was something I had to do. I felt compelled to do it, and,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad I stayed with it.
Sure.
Anybody who's writing, you have low points and high points while you're going through this. But I suggest strongly that you stay with it and finish it, because it really is a sense of accomplishment, mm-hmm. you know, when you get done with it.
Right.
So I'm proud of it.
Well, you should be. Yeah, it's beautiful. And your patience for, you know, handwriting it over a 20-year period and rewriting it. And, of course, the illustrations, that speaks a lot. And then plus, through writing it, you accomplished several things. I mean, one was rehashing your experiences, which helped you to heal. But you also provided the story for your children. And of course, the world gets your story as well, so you can help others understand the war and the process. Yes.
Right. When I first started writing it, it actually bothered me for a while, because for so many years I tried not to think about it,
mm-hmm.
and I can remember writing and then having to stop and get up and walk around and, like, calm down and everything. But people at the VA had told me that it was good therapy for me. And they recommend that anybody who has any kind of a traumatic experience should sit down and write about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It helps.
Right.
And I guess over the long run, it did help me.
Right. Sure.
But it certainly did stir up a lot of ghosts that I had to get over, but I'm glad I stuck with it. And,
Great.
And, you know, did it.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. So, and you have tremendous patience, as I mentioned, like just for the writing, but as well as anybody who's seen your work. You love detail.
Well, I was a commercial artist and illustrator for many mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And whenever I did illustrations, they were very realistic and representational and mostly detailed. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like after doing that for so many years, it's carried, my style is carried over into my fine art.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, a lot of my work, my fine art paintings, you might actually consider as an illustration more than a painting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like Norman Rockwell, not as good as him, but.
And is there a, excuse me, just one second. Is there like a definition that you said a painting versus an illustration? Is there like for the listeners and for myself, the distinction between, is there like a, you know, something that would be the distinction that you could help us understand that?
Well, I feel like, I mean, a landscape's a landscape, mm-hmm. you know, any kind of scene like that, it could be beautifully done and everything. But what I consider an illustration is something, a painting that tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I'll have figures in them and mm-hmm. they're doing something or they're from somewhere. I'm very much into history.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of colonial stuff and things like that. And I do boat scenes, and sometimes I'll have like the crew members on the boat doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people tell me that my paintings create like warm feelings or tell a story. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I'm after. And when somebody tells me that that's the feeling that they get out of one of my paintings, it's quite a compliment to me. Uh-huh. I feel like I've accomplished what I was trying to do with it.
Right. Yeah. That leads me to one of my questions, which is being an artist. Can you talk about the hard part of being an artist and also what makes it great for you?
The hard part. Well, I'll tell you this. I feel like I really didn't have a job. I didn't go to work every day. It was an enjoyment for me. I actually looked forward to going to work, mm-hmm. Not in Vietnam, but when I worked in the newspaper advertising art department, I certainly enjoyed it. The short deadlines, the suspense of meeting the deadlines and different things like that, and creating something. You start right. out with a blank piece of paper. And then you create something, and it's good enough that somebody likes it, and they're willing to pay you for it. That's really something.
That's the best. That's yeah. the best scenario, right?
Right. Mm. So, but I mean, as far as my paintings go, if I never sold the one, I would still, I would still have to paint because it's something inside of me that has to come out.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like
I told my kids that when they were growing up that, you're going to have to work the rest of your life. You might as well do something you like.
Right.
And I have. Mm-hmm. I'm a prime example of that. I've been very happy with being in the art field. I felt like this is what God wanted me to do. And he never put any stumbling blocks in my way. I went from one into another.
Right.
And it's been therapy for me too. Dealing with what I had to deal with, after the war and stuff like that. It's been kind of a therapy. It's, sure. To help me get through all of that.
Right. So, I was thinking of asking you, what are some things that you would tell your kids or grandkids or great grandkids, if they would listen, what are some things you would tell them? And you just mentioned that if you have to work, you might as well do something you like so that you enjoy it.
Right.
Any other messages besides that or anything that comes to mind?
Well, I mean, I'm 76 years old. I've seen a lot in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I've experienced a lot. And I think that, working is one category where I was very fortunate. And I think anybody who has a passion for something, if they can direct it towards their profession, mm-hmm. I think they're going to enjoy it. And it's going to show in their life, they're going to have a good attitude. Right. And I think also another thing that's very important to me is family. Mm-hmm. I've had some ups and downs. Everybody does. I've had, basically two divorces. But I've learned a lot through those. I think it's very important to be loving and caring and understanding, mm-hmm. With your significant other and your kids, always support them. I know I had a lot of success with my children in encouraging them to get into sports. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was important that I participate in that and support them.
Right.
And I can see that now in their lives with their kids. Mm-hmm. So it's an important thing. I mean, you got to have responsibility, first of all, mm-hmm. and you got to have a love for your family and understanding. Mm-hmm. And just, it's something that you have to work at all the time.
Yeah.
You cannot take it for granted.
Yep.
And it's so easy to do that, after years and years mm-hmm. of, so, but as long as you work at it and, you know, it's a great thing that you can, if I envy these people who have been married for 40, 50, 60 years, and mm-hmm. they're still in love with each other.
Yes.
That's the most wonderful thing.
Yes.
Really.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's some of the things I would put, you know, tell my kids and my grandkids.
Yeah. Well, beautiful. Beautiful. So you've also, I'm kind of jumping around with different questions as they come to mind, when you've done commission work also.
Right.
Can you describe some of the types of commissions you do and have done?
Well, yeah, when I was a commercial artist and illustrator, I did a lot of things, pretty much whatever anybody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But now, what I do as far as commissions go is I call them home portraits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do portraits of people.
Okay.
That to me is the hardest thing you can do, because I've done some of them. And I run into the same situation every time. The person you're doing them for never sees themselves as everybody else does. So you're going to run into a problem with them. Although, you know, I've done some, and the people around them, around the person I did the portrait of,
mm-hmm.
think it's wonderful.
Except you know? The person, huh?
Except the person, yeah. So these people who do portraits for a living, you know, my hat is off to them, really.
Awesome.
To me, it's the hardest thing to do. But they've got a way of doing it. I don't know if it's just, you know, they take the time to study the person or whatever it is.
Right.
And they can pretty much satisfy the people they're doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do homes and buildings and different things like that, especially old buildings. Anything that's got a lot of character.
Uh-huh.
And I've done a lot of what I call home portraits.
Uh-huh.
And I also do boat portraits
uh-huh.
and car uh-huh. portraits.
Uh-huh.
I guess anything, no animal portraits.
Uh-huh.
but houses and boats
uh-huh.
and you, cars and things.
And like you that. Also mentioned that you one time you had a client who wanted you to paint their meditation scene.
Oh yeah, somebody took me down to this park,
mm-hmm.
and they said, "I come here a lot when I want to just get away from the house and think."
Mm-hmm.
And I love this place. And she was sitting on the bank, looking out onto this waterway.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "This is what I want you to paint for me," and
beautiful.
Which I did.
Beautiful.
And that was the only time I ever had anybody do that. Mostly it was. They always wanted their house.
Right.
But
right.
This was different, and I really enjoyed doing it. It was more of a landscape than anything else.
Sure, sure.
But she loved it. So that's
yeah.
what she wanted.
It was a specific
yeah.
landscape that meant a lot to her. Yes.
Right.
Beautiful.
Right.
Wow. So, and your book now, it is in print and available, yes?
Well, yeah, limited availability. You have to uh-huh. get it through me.
Okay.
It's called 11 Months and 19 Days. That's how long I was in country. And I thought it'd make a great title.
Yes.
Because everybody over there counts their days.
Right.
Believe me.
Right. Oh, I'm sure.
Until they're coming home.
I bet.
And like I said before, it's an illustrated book.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually sell it at book talks. Veterans events,
mm-hmm.
and I take it with me when I do my outdoor art shows.
Right. So if someone either wants to buy a book or arrange to hear you speak or have you at their location to speak, they can reach you via email, right?
Right. Yeah. And my email is J Bowen, Bowen,
mm-hmm.
artist. @AOL.com.
Right. And it's the letter J, just the letter J,
yeah.
Bowen.
J for John.
Right.
and my website, which also has a page on it for my book,
mm-hmm.
is John Bowen Watercolorist with an IST on the end, mm-hmm. .com.
Great.
And I have about 50 or 60 of my images, and it mm-hmm. shows my prints.
Right.
And it has my book page. And I also have a page that is devoted to note cards, if anybody is interested.
Right. So all different levels of
right.
buy-in that they can participate in. And so you're available for commission work. You're available to speak. And of course, for your work, your artwork, they can purchase art from your website or by contacting you, as well as cars,
right.
as well as commissions. So you're...
Yeah. I just like to say, if there's anybody out there who are artists, especially if you're new artists, one of the most important things, I think, is to make sure that you get involved with at least one art group. It's good because you're seeing the input from other artists. They have events that you can get involved in. That's important. When I first started out, I was very much a loner when I came to my painting, and I got to the point where I said, I need to get in the company of other artists. I've gone as far as I can with myself, and it really helped me, and it gets you involved in a lot of things. And as long as it's connected with art, I don't mind doing it.
Awesome. Great. Well, that's beautiful. And we're just about wrapping up. Is there anything you would want to add, John, for our listeners?
Well, I don't know.
Or here's one.
I've had a full life. I've been an artist all my life, which I'm very thankful for. I've had to overcome a lot of things, but I think just getting involved in stuff and a lot of it had to do with my friends got me through a lot of things.
Right.
So, don't retreat from society. If you're going through a hard time, get out there, talk with your friends, get involved in something. Especially something that you might have a strong interest in.
Great.
Another thing that, one more thing, part of my process for painting is photography. I don't consider myself a professional photographer by any means, but I enjoy going out and taking pictures. I go out on shoots, and I use those pictures for my paintings. So it's part of my process. And anybody who's a painter can certainly get involved in that. And it's a lot of fun. And it's a little bit of a form of therapy also.
Right. And so what I'm hearing, one of the questions I like to ask, and this is copied from another podcast I've heard, Tim Ferriss's podcast, but he says, if you could put something on a billboard for the world to see, what would it be? You have like a saying that you would want to give to the world of encouragement?
This reminds me of what I told my kids. I said, when I die, put on my tombstone, he did what he wanted to do.
Okay, good. So do what you want to do.
Yeah, as long as it's, doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah, do what you want to do as long as it's loving and kind, right?
Right.
Very good. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John. This has been awesome. And I'm sure that our listeners are going to really enjoy this, have been listening. And I believe that they're going to be contacting you for just seeing your work and getting involved in whatever way they can, at whatever level they can play.
I'd be happy to have anybody, if they have got questions about any of that stuff.
Awesome.
Be happy to talk to them.
Awesome. Beautiful. And I will just end with my message, encouraging everyone to stay connected, subscribe to my podcast to hear more of wonderful inspirational stories of savvy seniors and more. To subscribe to my podcast, Live Well Long, Alexandra Van Horn. It is on iTunes.